For more than two centuries, the Bachs, living in the German state of Thuringia, had been a family of musicians. When somewhere in this region, a very good fiddler was heard, a fine organist or a flutist who played gay dances, the people would say, "He is a real Bach for sure." It went so far that they even used the name Bach when they meant musician. The love and the talent for music seemed to be inherited in this family from one generation to the next one. Until in 1685, a boy was born to the Bachs in Eisenstadt, who is destined to surpass all his ancestors and to become one of the greatest masters of all times, Johann Sebastian Bach. Eisenach, the lovely little town in Thuringia, was known as a center of good music. The community took great pride in its choir boys, who sang at church services and other ceremonies such as weddings and funerals. Often the youngsters would sing marching through the streets. If among the sopranos one voice sounded especially pure and sweet, the burghers knew that with the group was little Johann Sebastian, the son of the town organist and court musician Ambrosius Bach. At a very early age, Johann Sebastian lost his parents within a few months. The orphan child was sent to live with his older married brother, the organist Johann Christian Bach. From him, the boy received his first instruction on the organ. Soon, the young musician mastered all the organ pieces written for beginners. He asked for more difficult music. When his brother refused, thinking that it was much too soon, Johann Sebastian tiptoed in the middle of the night to a bookcase where he had seen a big volume of famous organ compositions. He had no candle, but by the light of the moon, he copied the pieces line for line. It took him many weeks and many a sleepless night. But so great was his hunger for good music, and such was his willpower, that he persevered until all the pieces were written down. From then on, he would play whatever he liked, and nobody could hold him back. Christian's house became too small for his growing family, and Johann Sebastian, at the age of 15, had to look out for himself. A friend advised him to try his luck in Lüneburg, where some choir boys were wanted at the church. The town was about 200 miles away, a long journey if one didn't have the money for the stagecoach. But the boy marched on day after day, and the music in his heart made him forget the weary feet. Several years in Lüneburg, working hard and gaining valuable experience. Besides his duties as a chorister, he studied several instruments with great diligence. Now he played the violin, the viola, the harpsichord, and the clavier to perfection. But his fondest love was pledged forever to the queen of instruments, the organ. He could make it sound more beautiful than anyone else. Evenings, when all the work was done, Bach would often return to the church. There, in happy solitude, he played for hours. Many a late passerby, hearing the majestic sounds coming from the darkened church, believed that an angel from heaven was sitting at the keyboard. But it was only Johann Sebastian, trying one of his toccatas and fugues. Bach started his first position in Arnstadt as an organist and choirmaster. The 18-year-old discharged his duties to the great satisfaction of the community. Therefore, they willingly granted him 4 weeks' leave of absence when he asked for it. Bach longed to hear the famous composer and organist Buxtehude in Lübeck. The church concerts, played by this master, gave young Bach such devotional inspiration that he pledged himself to write his music in honor of God alone and never to look for worldly fame. From that time on, all of Bach's works bore the heading, In the Name of the Lord, or To the Glory of God Alone. In this spirit, he created such treasures of sacred music as the Great Mass in B minor. Could not tear himself away from Lübeck, where there was so much to learn and to admire. When he came back to Arnstadt several months later, his superiors sharply rebuked him for such disobedience. Bach was deeply hurt and decided to look for a new position. Without any difficulty, he found it in the town of Mühlhausen, where he was appointed organist and music master with a good salary. Now, he could make plans to settle down and have a home of his own. In 1707, the young master married his second cousin, Maria Barbara Bach. She bore him 4 children. 3 sons became distinguished composers, Wilhelm Friedemann, Carl Philipp Emanuel, and Johann Christoph. Soon the house of the town organist was filled with gaiety and music. Stay in Mühlhausen came to an unexpected end when Duke William of Saxonia invited Bach to take a well-paid post as his court organist and chamber musician. Bach, whose salary was by then hardly enough to support his increasing family, accepted with joy. Now came 9 happy years of working for a patron who was not only a great music lover, but also a deeply religious man. The great organ of the castle's chapel inspired Bach to compose more and more works for this instrument. Some of his most famous cantatas were also written during those years. Bach's reputation as an incomparable master had now spread through all of Germany. One day, however, a French musician, Louis Marchand, appeared in Dresden and boasted that he could defeat Bach in a contest on the harpsichord. All of Bach's friends and patrons begged him to accept the challenge. The meeting was to be held at the court of King August the Strong in Dresden. A distinguished audience waited in the magnificent music room when Bach entered, serious and dignified as always. Marchand, however, was nowhere to be seen. The Frenchman had secretly left town in a great hurry, knowing well that he would be vanquished. The news was received with joy and laughter. Now Bach gave a solo recital for the glittering audience, convincing everyone that he was the supreme master. The year 1717 brought another change. Prince Leopold of Anhalt-Köthen invited Bach to become his Kapellmeister, which means orchestra leader, and so the family moved to the little German town. Once again, the master had decided wisely and well. The young prince, a great music lover, was delighted with his new conductor, whose genius he fully appreciated. Besides paying a handsome salary, the prince granted him many privileges. The family even had their apartment in the palace. There was one thing, though, that greatly disappointed Bach. He found no organ in Köthen. However, the court orchestra was excellent, and he became greatly interested in writing chamber music for various instruments, using not only the woodwinds, but also the trumpets for brilliant solo parts. The delightful, gay Brandenburg concertos are proof of Bach's new style. During the years in Köthen, Bach created some of his most treasured compositions. The French and the English suites for harpsichord, sonatas and concertos for the violin, and the 48 preludes and fugues called the Well-Tempered Clavier, a monument to his matchless art of counterpoint. Prince Leopold was so fond of Bach that he frequently took him along on his journeys. The master enjoyed these trips, which gave him an opportunity to see some of the other German cities and to perform before many delighted audiences. But he was always glad to come home again and be with his family. One day, returning from a voyage, he hurriedly entered the house. There he heard the tragic news that his beloved wife had died unexpectedly, leaving four young children motherless. Bach was deeply grieved. He tried his best to bring up the children by himself. Still, the lack of a mother's gentle care was felt very strongly, and as time passed on, the master began to contemplate a second marriage. Luck was with him when he met Anna Magdalena Wilken, the daughter of a court trumpeter. Although much younger than Bach, she became his devoted, loving wife and an affectionate stepmother, bringing happiness and contentment to the family. Moreover, Anna Magdalena was very musical, sang with a lovely soprano voice, and proved to be a great helper in copying much of the master's music. This marriage was blessed with 13 children. True to tradition, almost all of them studied an instrument. Many happy evenings were spent in the big music room, where the Bachs often played an informal recital of chamber music just for their own enjoyment. When Prince Leopold, Bach's great friend and patron, married a young, beautiful girl, life at the court began to change. The new princess did not care for the grand and serious music that had been performed up to now. She would rather have the orchestra play simple dances for the many parties given at the castle. Bach was displeased with this kind of work, which he felt to be below his dignity. It was, therefore, good news to him when he learned that in the large city of Leipzig, the post as organist and teacher at the church school was vacant. Bach applied for it and was immediately accepted. The prince was very regretful to lose a musician of such eminence, but he understood the master's motive and granted his request. With great anticipation, Bach settled in Leipzig. He was to remain there for the rest of his life. Continuous hard work. Bach, as cantor at St. Thomas School, gave choir boys instruction in music and Latin, which he also knew very well. All the church music was performed under his direction, and for every Sunday throughout the year, Bach had to compose a new cantata. As the most celebrated organist of his time, he was often invited to give recitals in other German cities. Yet with all these manifold duties, Bach created one immortal masterpiece after another. The Mass in B minor, the Christmas Oratorio, and for the time of Lent, the Sublime Passions according to St. John and St. Matthew. As he wrote this music, which pictures the suffering and the death of the Savior, Bach himself was so deeply moved that he sat at his desk, deadly pale and trembling, tears rolling down his cheeks. Nobody would have dared to disturb him during these hours. withdrew from the world. His art, his work, and his big family, that was all he treasured in life. While Bach was aware of his own greatness, he remained humble as a truly pious man. Despite his dignity, he had a good sense of humor, which is reflected in some of his works, such as the Coffee Cantata. As he grew old, great suffering befell Bach. His eyes, which he had always overstrained by writing notes for endless hours and engraving them himself, finally gave out. An operation did not help much, and during his last years, Bach was totally blind. But he bore his fate with patience, grateful for the fact that his creative power remained as great as ever. The year 1750, Johann Sebastian Bach died. Shortly thereafter, a time came, inconceivable as it seems, when he was only remembered as the great organist, while his works were no longer performed and finally forgotten. Almost 80 years later, it was Felix Mendelssohn who discovered the precious scores in St. Thomas Church. He recognized their greatness at once. In 1829, the St. Matthew Passion was performed under his direction. From that time on, Bach's creations have been and will be revered all over the world. What Mozart said about him is true to this very day. He is the father of all music. We are his children.